Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or any of its affiliates. If you have any questions you'd like addressed on the call, please email them to david.lundgren@hancockbank.com. Today on the call, David Lundgren will be our moderator, John Portwood, Chief Investment Officer, Greg Haluski, and Jeff Tangus, Investment Directors, will be answering some of the questions that Dave poses. And with that, I'm going to hand the call over to David.
Great. Thank you, Ashley, and good morning, everyone. Well, John, the most obvious starting point is the fiscal cliff. You can't turn on the news the last couple of weeks without that being discussed. And I think it might make sense. We won't assume that everybody knows what the fiscal cliff is, so just with a real brief definition. The fiscal cliff is basically a combination of expiring tax cuts, also known as the Bush tax cuts, and across-the-board government spending cuts that are scheduled to become effective December 31st, 2012. So without any type of congressional action, we'll see that we'll revert back to where we were prior to the Bush tax cuts, and we have a tremendous amount of government spending cuts that will take effect. So, John, if you could, maybe take us through the potential scenarios on how this could play out.
Okay, Dave. There are basically three scenarios. We've talked about them before. I'm sure all of you, listening to this call today have kept track of them as well. And basically, some sort of deal is done before the cliff arrives in early January. The other one, it would be some sort of deal after the cliff, I guess. They're still talking at the end of January, but they don't get a deal until after January. And then finally, something really exciting happens and some sort of grand bargain is agreed upon wherein you not only take some of the negative consequences of the fiscal cliff off the table, but you also design some sort of plan going forward to reduce the budget deficit and encourage growth to hopefully take care of our long-term deficit and budget problems that we haven't addressed yet. And it looks like that we were in the camp along with everybody else a few months back thinking that it probably made a lot more sense for some sort of deal if it was only temporary to avoid the automatic tax increases in January going into effect. It made sense probably for both parties because it made sense for the economy not to have any problems going into the first of the year. Unfortunately, after Obama's reelection, it appears that the administration is taking a relatively hard line, maybe somewhat harder line than everyone had anticipated, and that's sort of reflected in what Treasury Secretary Geithner said when he gave the Republicans the first draft, I guess, of what the administration wanted, and it was basically raise taxes, don't really cut spending now, and they also ask for presidential authority to determine what the debt limit was going to be. Well, determining the debt limit and how much the government spends is really belongs to Congress, and I think that's a constitutional issue. So that was really a non-starter, and that created a lot of disturbance, I guess, at the time. And to this point, we really haven't seen any evidence that the administration has come back in any conciliatory manner in response to what the Republicans have suggested. So it appears that this is going to go down to the wire, and I would guess that in all likelihood, a deal will not occur until sometime, after the end of the year, given what we know currently and what everybody's talking about and whatever we can glean from, the various research sources we have in Washington, it looks like that's likely to be the case. Now, what does that suggest in terms of what the final deal will look like? It's highly unlikely that nothing at all will be done. I'm beginning to think that given all the possibilities, that perhaps the most likely possibility is you have something in January or fairly early in the year that does not approach the grand bargain in terms of what it really does in the long term, but it's sort of a combination of minimizing the fiscal cliff issue and perhaps moving somewhat in the direction of a solution, a long-term solution to the debt and deficit problems that we have. And there'll probably be a lot of hoopla around it suggesting, you know, this is really a big deal and it's going to work and so forth and so on. And it's probably just a stopgap measure. And we're probably going to have something coming behind that. But I'm beginning to think that's probably more than likely what's going to happen, but it may not be until sometime early next year.
Okay.
The issue, of course, is, you know, what does that do to the economy
right,
in the early part of next year? If the fiscal cliff, let's say if the taxes were in place all of next year,
let me stop you for 1 second before we get into the impact on the economy. What you kind of laid out as a likely scenario is that something gets done in January. So, you know, in effect, you know, the big concern, or, you know, you hear a lot of economists talk about how going over the cliff would be catastrophic for the economy. And what you described is, in effect, going over the cliff. But is there, is the effect on the economy somewhat muted in that, yes, we did go over the cliff, but everybody knows that we're going to come to some type of solution? Help me with that, reconcile those differences.
If we pass January the 2nd and both parties are very, very far apart and it appears that they're not talking at all, then that's probably fairly negative for the markets, you know, and the economy at that point. But if the talking is continuing and it looks like something is going to happen early in the year, which will mitigate a lot of these issues, then the impact of the economy is probably going to be somewhat muted. The economists tell us that in total, going over the cliff, so to speak, with taxes increasing for the full year of 2013 would be about a $600 billion hit to the economy. And that probably would produce, as far as the econometrics math would suggest, probably, you know, -2%, -3% GDP recession, which would be a pretty decent recession in terms of history. It's not likely to be that bad. If something is done in January, you know, as I described, then you're probably looking at a curve, so to speak, that might be, say, you know, 0.5% of GDP or maybe 1% of GDP, because you've got new taxes going into effect that relate to Obamacare. You're probably going to have the FICA taxes put back on again, and some other things like that that will probably, you know, not really, you know, contribute much to economic activity next year. So you're still looking at relatively slow growth going into next year. But if you have a recession, it might be pretty mild.
Right.
You know, it could be something along the lines of, you know, -0.5% of GDP or maybe something relatively flat. And we have to remember that, you know, we never got up to full speed anyway, you know, following the last recession from an economic standpoint. You're still looking at relatively moderate growth and relatively moderate demand. And, you know, since we don't have a lot of excesses out there in the economy, there's probably not a lot to wind down. So, you know, we might be looking at a stagnant situation for a while, you know, but not necessarily a significant hit to the economy. Now, you know, that's the bad thing about this is, of course, that's the bullish case. You know, muddle through is really the bullish case, because there's nothing out there suggesting that we're on the verge of going back to a 3% GDP growth rate for a while. So,
let me just make sure I'm clear. So you think that, you know, the $600 billion impact, if we go over the cliff, that would be a devastating economic event, but very unlikely. So we may go over the cliff, but sometime January, early in 2013, some kind of resolution is achieved where you have a combination of spending cuts and raising of some taxes to where it's still going to be an impact to the economy, but it's not going to be that severe as if we just went over the cliff and nothing occurred?
No. Okay. I mean, for it to be really severe, it would have to continue for quite some time. Or early next year, you'd have to have a situation develop where everyone believed no deal would ever be done of any kind, which okay. is highly unlikely.
All right. Let's, you know, obviously the fiscal cliff is the focal point of the market's attention right now, but what about the health of the U.S. economy outside of that? How are things looking right now, just in general?
Generally speaking, we're doing okay. We're probably, you know, growing at roughly a 2% pace on average. The GDP for the third quarter was revised up to about 2.7, which was good. Unfortunately, most of that revision came from inventories and government spending. And when you look at real final sales, you really didn't get much of an improvement. You're still looking at pretty weak growth in per capita disposable income. So, you know, while that third quarter looked pretty good, a lot of it came from sources that might not be repeated in the fourth quarter. Now, the fourth quarter is going to be impacted by Hurricane Sandy. And, you know, current estimates for the fourth quarter are maybe 1% or so, you know, to some degree driven by what happened in the Northeast after the storm. But in any case, it looks like the leading economic indicators are still in uptrends. You know, you'd have to grade the economy as probably recovering still or expanding still, you know, given what's happening to the leading indicators. Unfortunately, we're still looking at various measures of income, employment, other things that are relatively sluggish. You know, also we've had some positive news on housing. Housing is no longer a drag on the economy. It's probably adding a little bit. I think probably some of the housing bullishness, I guess, has been overhyped a bit because housing now, from the last number I saw, accounts for about 2% of GDP. And, you know, back when housing was really peaking out and we were in the midst of the bubble, it was, you know, several times that size. So it's not taking anything away from GDP growth, but it's probably not adding a great deal either. But adding it all up, it looks like we're probably still moving in the right direction, but we're just at a very low growth rate, you know, and the economy appears to be relatively fragile and probably, you know, still subject to shocks. And you know, Europe is not really improving a great deal. They're not. It's not as negative as it used to be from an economic standpoint in Europe, but they still have their problems. So, you know, bottom line, you know, unless we really have a significant change in tax rates, we're likely to be, you know, in a muddled through environment with perhaps, you know, some weakness in the first half of the year, but maybe not anything significant. Even the people calling for a recession, and there aren't many of those. There are a few out there that think we might be in recession now once the data is revised. But even they are probably in the camp of if we have a recession, it's relatively mild, you know, and you wouldn't probably see a significant increase in, you know, unemployment or anything like that. You just kind of go into a, you know, a stagnant economic situation.
Okay. Thank you, John. Greg, you there?
Yeah.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I think it's interesting. We're going to talk about stocks for a minute. I think it's interesting as, you know, we've both been in the business for a while, and I think one of the first things we were probably taught was that the market hates uncertainty. And I don't know if that's true anymore because we've had an incredible amount of uncertainty over the last few years, really, and amazingly, the stock market continues to move forward. The month of November actually finished positive. We were up a modest 0.6%. That brings the S&P 500 to up 16% year-to-date, so very good, strong 2012. And I guess, you know, I'm somewhat confused. You would think with all the attention being paid to the fiscal cliff and all the uncertainty surrounding that and the Eurozone, you think we'd be in a tougher spot. And we did have a little bit of a sell-off. I think by mid-November we're down about 8% off the 2012 high, but we rallied, recovered about half of that over the last 2 weeks of the month. Any knowledge you can share with us as to what's going on, you know, why we can continue to see the move in the market. You know, I think that I've heard the saying, you know, climbing the wall of worry, and kind of give us your outlook on where we go from here. And then second part of the question is talk about an over-the-cliff scenario like we just talked about with John.
Yeah, well, I think the markets are reacting positively because, again, uncertainty, I think, still bothers them, but also they're a discounting mechanism. They're looking 6 months, 6 or 9 months out, and I think the markets do see a deal in the future. That deal's probably going to be something that's watered down, maybe spread over a few years. The other positive, a recent poll on Bloomberg showed that two-thirds of the respondents thought the global economy was stable or improving, and that the U.S. was the best place for opportunities in the next year. So I think there's some optimism out there. Some of the companies are also, we see, are paying special dividends. We're seeing a reversal of gains realizations. That's being pushed out. Can you come back to me? Dave?
Yeah.
Can you come back to me for a moment?
Sure.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm great this morning. How about you?
I'm good. In November, I don't think this was a big news item, but France lost its AAA rating. And I guess, you know, throughout this long debate, the political debate on resolution to our fiscal issues, our debt deficit issues, there's a very good possibility that the United States will lose its AAA rating. Do you agree with that statement? And if so, what are the ramifications if the rating agencies were to come out and say that the debt of the United States is only AA credit?
Well, by way of reminder, S&P downgraded the U.S. debt, 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, and it really had very little impact. At that time, after S&P downgraded our debt, everybody looked at Moody's, and Moody's said, well, we're gonna wait and see if Congress will deal with the deficit and the debt and make a decision at that point. They've continued to make comments that if we don't get our house in order, that they will definitely downgrade us as well as S&P. It appears that that's fully factored into the market. I'm not sure that that's going to change people's mind. What's really driving people, whether they do or do not invest in the United States, of course, is the perception that we still hold the safest investments, the safest currency around the world. Even France, after they were downgraded, traded down in price a little bit and then reversed itself and traded back up, and is actually higher in price, lower in yield now than it was when the downgrade was announced. So most of this is generally factored into the market by the time the rating agencies get around to taking action. But the driving factor, I think, that motivates most people, again, is the safety factor, and also the fact that central banks around the world are extremely accommodative, which means rates will stay low, and that is really driving people into things like treasuries or French debt, things of that sort, because they realize rates are going to stay low and that it is a relatively safe investment.
All right. John, let's come back to you. Thank you, Jeff. You know, a lot of focus has been here in the U.S., and, you know, for the last couple of years when we've had these calls, we've spent quite a bit of time talking about the Eurozone, and it's kind of been pushed to the back burner. Hopefully that's a good sign that things have improved, or is it just the focus is elsewhere? What's going on in the Eurozone? Is there anything, improvements or news related to their debt crisis?
Lately, I guess the series of bailouts or financial manipulations, I guess, that are going on in Europe have sort of taken the crisis off the boil. in recent months. Greece just got a new bailout, but you know, but once again, when everybody looks at Greece and they do the math, they find that Greece will never be able to pay the money back. And so, you know, there'll be more haircuts and more bond write-downs are certainly coming in Greece. Spain is still on the bubble. They're hesitant to ask for a bailout in Europe because they'll have to agree to certain austerity measures, and Spain is in a lot of turmoil these days with 25% unemployment, so they say, and the state of Catalonia in Spain is talking about seceding. So they got all kinds of issues there, and Spain is not likely to see its situation improve very much in the long run. So, you know, bottom line, I guess, is we're still looking at a Eurozone that will change in character at some indefinite time in the future, because they're simply going to have to write off a lot of that debt ultimately. You know, they can't really pay it all back. So a lot of can-kicking is still going on. On the positive side, though, as I think we, you know, either I or one of us mentioned before, you know, the European economic situation appears to be stabilizing.
Right.
You know, so that's good. I mean, the currency situation may not be stable, but at least the economic situation is somewhat more stable. But we're probably going to see more flare-ups in Europe as time goes on. And the big question, of course, is when do they finally come to the final decision, you know, about what to do? And that might be. Might be some time. Something else I might mention that I happened to see the other day from a research report, we don't always look at all the European countries in some detail to determine, you know, what's happening in detail, you know, within all of their stock markets. But in the Greek market, for example, which is down like 80 or 90% from its peak, as we might all would imagine, there are various Greek companies that continue to pay dividends because they have international exposure. You know, higher quality companies are doing reasonably well and still have positive cash flow in Greece, you know, indicating that even in the midst of despair and depression and chaos, somebody somewhere is making money.
Oh, good.
And I guess as active managers, we're always trying to find those companies somewhere that are making money even in the midst of chaos and depression and uncertainty. So
invest in Greece, is that what you're saying?
Well, carefully, very, very carefully. There aren't many there that are attractive, but there are a few that are hanging in.
Greg, were you able to rejoin us?
Yeah.
Okay.
As I said, we've got kind of a reversal going on. We're usually taking tax losses at the end of the year, but that's being pushed out in anticipation of the higher tax rates into next year, and actually people are kind of realizing capital gains this year to take advantage of the lower cap gains rate. So I think that's kind of a different dynamic that's working on the markets right now. As I mentioned, some companies are also paying special dividends, moving that income into this tax year. But looking out, I think what John said, unless they drag it out, the markets will probably cope just fine. And I think the post-election environment now provides some clarity for businesses. So that was a big uncertainty. And I think, you know, regardless if you were going Democrat or Republican, you know what you're dealing with now in terms of your business. So you can budget and you can plan, you can invest. And so I think looking out ahead, I'm still on bias to the positive side. And I think, you know, companies have a lot of cash on the sidelines, and I think that cash will probably get put to work. And this may be way too optimistic, but, you know, if that third quarter revision upwards to GDP and replace some of that government spending with business investment, you know, we could start inching up towards a 3% or more, greater growth rate. So, again, on balance, that might be too rosy of a scenario, but I like to I'm in the glasses half full camp.
Good. Well, and I guess to the question about over the cliff being catastrophic, it's kind of along the same lines of what John said. Just tell me if you agree with this. If it seems apparent that there is going to be a deal made, then market reaction will be somewhat muted if we go over the cliff. But if they're entrenched on both sides and it doesn't look like anything's going to be done, then we could see a pretty significant pullback. Is that a fair statement?
I think that would be a fair statement, although I think, you know, right now we're at a stalemate, and if you look at the pattern and what's going on in Congress, that's kind of been the long-term pattern where, you know, they bargain, they get to a stalemate, and then finally an agreement is made. And I think, as I said, if they can find some common ground, a combination of tax increases, push that out over a couple of years, which, you know, could be analogous to kicking the can down the road, you know, I think the market's okay with that. But if nothing is done and it drags out, you know, past January, I really doubt that they're going to get anything done by the end of the year. But if it drags out much further than January, and remember they can do these solutions retroactively, then I think the market's okay. It's factoring in that amount of uncertainty. But again, the market's probably moved beyond that and is really looking ahead.
All right. If anyone has any questions, go ahead and email them to me, david.lundgren@hancockbank.com. Let's give it a minute to see if anybody has any questions. And I don't think so. I think we're done. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us, and we'll look forward to talking to you next month.